Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance you can sort online anytime.
Well, joining me here in studio this morning, our young couple who as this year began, they were looking forward to welcoming their first child into the world. On the 1st of February, little Florence Tavenot was delivered at Holles Street. But in the words of her father, Will, sadly, she never got to take a breath or to open her eyes. It's been a really tough year for expectant parents, with partners unable to attend maternity appointments and procedures because of the pandemic. It's been hard too for people who have lost children, unable to grieve or to be comforted in the usual ways. But Sinead and William Tavenot are here this morning. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. Thank you. Starting with you, Sinead, tell me a little about yourselves, you know, who you are and where you're both from.
Okay, so Will and I, I'm Irish obviously, but Will is from Devon in the UK. We met in Brussels. We were both working for the European institutions. Seems like a lifetime ago now. And we met there. We decided to give London a go for a few years. So we went there for a while. And as happens, you want to get out of London after a while. It's great for a little bit, but then you do want to move on. So we'd been looking to go elsewhere and an opportunity came up in Dublin. So we decided to move back to Ireland. So we're back in Ireland about 2.5 years now.
And Will, when did you decide, OK, we're going to start growing a family now. We'd like to have a baby.
I think it'd been on our radar for a long time. And things don't necessarily work out the way you want them to. So certainly something we've been trying for when we're in London and takes a while sometimes.
And how was your pregnancy, Sinead, when you finally did get pregnant?
It was great. Like, I wasn't sick. I was out walking the dog every day. Weirdly, working from home during lockdown, we went overnight to working from home. It kind of suited me. So I could go for a walk at lunchtime or I could have a nap. No one knew any different. It was pretty good, really relaxing. I went up and down for scans on my own, but we just accepted it. That was it. I mean, that was part of lockdown, part of COVID. A lot of police checkpoints on the way up from Kildare, where we're living. But the police were always so friendly, you know, when you told them why you were in the car and what you were doing. Are you okay? And have a safe journey. And they were really nice. And, we kind of started accepting that Will couldn't come with me for obvious reasons. But it was an easy pregnancy.
And like a lot of expectant couples for their first baby, were you like reading a lot of books? Were you preparing, Will?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think read the book that Sinead helpfully gave me. I think I was kind of excited about all the equipment that you can buy and did all my research into that and the kind of getting the right pushchair and all of that. I spent quite a lot of time doing that and doing that research, and you know, that was where the excitement was for me.
When did you realise, Sinead, it was very late in your pregnancy that something might not be right?
Yeah, so I was just over 37 weeks and it was actually my first day of maternity leave. I'd been in to Holles Street a few days before for a scan. All was well. And we were actually thinking our baby might be on the kind of big side because she was looking quite big and I was huge. But I woke up that morning and I was kind of slow getting out of bed. First day of maternity leave, I was going to milk it, you know, get my coffee brought to me in the bed and everything. And then I just thought something wasn't quite right. So I got on the yoga ball, did all the things they tell you to do, you know, have a fizzy drink, lie down. And I just had a feeling something wasn't quite right. Now, we had one instance earlier in my pregnancy that I had reduced movements and I went in for a scan and all was fine, totally fine. And it was interesting looking at the scan and I could see her moving, but I couldn't feel a thing. It was just she was in a funny position. So, but this morning it was a bit later on and I kind of felt I should have been feeling things. And then Will was on a work call and I thought, I'll just hang on until he's off the call and then we'll go in and check things out. And while he was on the call, I had the dog sitting on my lap and the dog would always snuggle in into my bump. And we joked that, you know, there was never kicks when Will sat touching my bump, but there was when the dog and the dog, there was nothing. There was just nothing. And that's when I started to get a little bit anxious. So we got in the car. Will came with me this time. I was going to go on my own, not wanting to kind of panic or anything. So we went straight in. Will waited outside. And I went straight in and That's when, you know, the midwife had the Doppler to see if she could hear something, and there was nothing. And then that's, I kind of knew by the way she was talking, she was trying to keep me at ease, but I just knew that it wasn't okay.
And at what stage was Will brought in? You were outside in the car, were you?
Yeah, so I, like a lot of fathers, or fathers-to-be, I was outside Holler Street in the car, waiting. But I think, you know, a lot rushes through your mind at these times. And as Sinead said, we've been through it once before, so there's a kind of rational part of you that wants to stay calm and just go, you know, it's going to be nothing, it'll be fine, like it was before. But, you know, there's the other part of you that is really, really worried and fearing the worst. So, yeah, I'm sitting out in the car. I actually had the dog with me. The dog was, you know, put in the boot as we kind of rushed in. So the dog, you know, gave a little stretch of the legs around the park. But then I saw a midwife coming towards the car. And, you know, that was when I guess I started really fearing the worst, and she just said, you need to come in now. And I said, you know, worried about the dog. She said, just leave it, it'll be fine. So I was taken in a side entrance into Holler Street, and I think that was the first time I'd actually even been into the hospital with COVID, and brought up into the room where Sinead was, and I think all the staff had cleared out, and it was just the two of us, and Sinead had to say, you know, she's gone, and that was it really. And it's, even though in your head you run through all the different options, all the different scenarios, and think that you're prepared, you know there's always a part of you that I guess it fears for the worst, but you don't think it's going to happen to you. And then hearing those words, and it's just, you know, the wind is completely taken out of you. And to be honest, you know, I don't think you necessarily feel that much at the time, apart from just a complete numbness.
What happened then, Sinead?
We just sat in the room for a few minutes. Our doctor, she came, and that was the first time Will had met her. He hadn't met her before. So suddenly there's this woman he'd never met before, who's terribly nice, but Will didn't.
Because of COVID, of course, he couldn't get in.
Hadn't gotten in. It was, so we did ring my parents to tell them, and I think at that point, I always thought until then, the worst thing that could happen when you're in your 37, 38 weeks is an emergency C-section. I never thought we would be told, especially after such a healthy pregnancy, that something like this could happen. And I guess at that point we didn't know why it had happened. So you don't know, and everything is going through your head. Like, I'm thinking, should I have had that glass of wine on Christmas Day? Or, you know, maybe, you know, the dog was pulling on the lead when we were walking him, or, you know, why did I, you know, all these little things are running through your head, but you don't know. So our doctor came and talked to us, and then she said, look, you're going to go home. And I'm thinking, I'm going home. She said, you're going to go home. So this was a Friday, come back in Sunday morning. And I kind of thought, I have to go home for 2 days. Like, what? So we went home for 2 days. But actually now, look, I understand why they send you home. You need to process that in your head, that you've been just told this crazy thing, and you're not catching up. You don't really, it hasn't really hit you. So we went home for 2 days, repacked the bag. Because at this point, we actually had the car seat in the car. Because I used to laugh at, like, the dads outside Holler Street when they don't know how to work the car seat. And Will was like, I'm not going to be one of those. I'm going to have this down. I'm going to make sure I know what I'm doing. So the car seat was in the car. So we got home and we're like looking at this car seat that we'd kind of covered up with our coats.
Yeah, I mean, there was everything around, all the stuff that we'd bought, all the stuff that we prepared. We were 2 weeks off her due date. You know, and it's hard seeing all of that. And I think for me, maybe those 2 days waiting were some of the hardest, because you are just left alone, particularly with, you know, with COVID. It was just the two of us. It was really in the middle of lockdown, of the tightest lockdown as well. And you're just left alone with your thoughts and with each other, which in some senses is good. And you're obviously trying to process it, but it is a terribly, terribly lonely time.
So you had it back in 2 days later?
2 days later, yeah, we went back in. Yeah, and we were brought into this little room, and there was kind of like a pull-out bed that Will could stay in. And the midwives were amazing, and they said, "This is your room now for as long as you need it. You can stay here as long as you want." And they brought in little things like, you know, little, not real candles, obviously a little bit of a fire hazard, but like, you know, the little battery-powered ones, and just nice little touches to make it a little bit, it's a hospital room, but to make it a little bit more homely and comfortable for us. You know, there was any amount of cups of tea coming to us, and they were just so kind, and they said, just, you know, this is your space now. And we have a card for Will. If you can come in and out, so he can go out and get a coffee or do whatever. And then they start the induction. So you're induced, and you know, it is something that someone had said to me. I never really thought what happens when your baby dies. How do you, you know, you have to give birth. The baby has to come out some way still. And so it was kind of terrifying, but you have all these amazing people around you, and they're holding your hand, walking you through it. If I'm totally honest, you know, when Will wrote the piece about Florence that he wrote, there was things in that that I'd completely forgotten, because it's a blur. Because you're just, you know, it does go a bit hazy, you know, when you're just going through it.
You found out that it was the cord, wasn't it? Was that important for you to find out what had happened to your Florence?
So our doctor and the midwives in those few days before Florence was born, they're kind of preparing you for what it might be. So they're saying, you know, well, it mightn't be obvious, or, you know, you may need to go for a post-mortem, or down to, you know, the coroner may need to be involved. And we're thinking all these new words that, you know, were never in our vocabulary. And they kind of prepared us. So when she was born, it was as clear as day. You know, the cord was wrapped around her neck, but there was also a tight knot in the cord. In some ways, it's kind of easier, because we know what happened to her. There's no mystery. And some parents never find out why they lost their baby. You know, they did a few other tests and things, and everything came back clear. It was just a knot in the cord. There was nothing more complicated than that. She got tangled up, and that was it.
And well, you wrote a beautiful blog about Florence. But tell us, like, when she was born, you both were able to stay with her, and she was in her Moses basket. Tell us about all that and how much that meant, because it's as though you could celebrate her life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, going back a little bit further, you know, when we were sent back home, my immediate reaction was, I just don't ever want to set foot in Holles Street again. You know, it's just too hard. And I couldn't really comprehend. I couldn't imagine how Sinead was going to do what she had to do. It's just unimaginable, really. But actually then, when we did go back on the Sunday, and kind of we were met by one of the midwives, Kira, and handed this card, as Sinead said, and that was kind of, it was kind of like this, everybody and all the staff knew what this card meant, that it, you know, we'd suffered a bereavement. And
it's,
know,
a purple card.
Yeah, a purple card with a sort of Celtic scroll on. And actually it was on the door to the sort of ensuite room, bereavement suite that we'd been given. And actually getting back there, then having the midwives around us, who obviously just so experienced, and having this private room, things started to change quite quickly. And I guess my perspective started to change quite quickly. Having that support around you, really experienced support, was just amazing. And I mean, you couldn't do it without that. The specific room was really important. And I think they have two in Holles Street. And one of the reasons why I wrote the little piece that I did on Just Giving was they were looking to raise funds to furnish a third room, because, you know, sadly they need these things. And they're normal maternity rooms as well. They're used by people who don't suffer bereavement as well. But it is really, really important to have those rooms. We had, you know, almost 4 days or whatever it was in that room, and kind of 36 hours with Florence after she was born. You know, we came back from the delivery suite, and she was in a little Moses basket that has a little cooling mattress underneath. And that that was just a hugely important time for me, because before that, I mean, again, with COVID, not being able to go to any of the appointments, any of the scans, this was the only chance I had to kind of try and connect with my daughter. And when she was born, you know, we were in the delivery suite for a while Sinead recovered, you know, quite late into the evening. And having her lie there just immediately afterwards, I was struggling to really kind of see this baby as my daughter. And I think obviously when they're born alive, it's you know, what you hear is it's a very different thing. You've got them crying, you've got them all the different sounds and things that are going on. But we obviously didn't have this. You know, she obviously didn't cry. And so then being able to take her back to the room, just being the three of us, particularly through the night, just spending time with her and looking at her. And, you know, I wrote in the blog, your mind kind of tricks you, because she looked just like she was sleeping. You know, she was a perfect little baby, you know, full term, good weight, 6 pounds, 8 ounces. You know, to all intents and purposes, she could have been ready to go, you know. And yeah, the mind tricks you looking at her. As, you know, you think you might see that little chest rising and falling, but obviously it wasn't. But yeah, just that time was unbelievably important, just to try and connect to her and see her as my daughter.
Did you find it helpful as well, Sinead? I mean, you had to go through the birth. And I think they brought in a little memory box of things for you. Yeah.
So, strangely, when I gave birth, this is going to sound really maybe a bit weird, I was actually just so happy to have her in my arms. It sounds bizarre. And looking back, the midwives were kind of a bit teary around me and that, and I didn't really notice it at the time. But I was just so happy to have her in my arms, that I wasn't really sad at that moment. You know, I wasn't, that wasn't the hard bit. A few days before, when I was told her heart had stopped beating, that was tough, because I knew I was going to break the heart of my husband, you know, by telling him myself. But when I had her in my arms, it was fantastic. It was just great to finally meet my daughter. So, you know, then we went back to the little room, and it was just us, the three of us, and we kind of thought, right, well, this is our time now. So we read stories, we played some music, we talked about her cousins and her, you know, family, and we just talked to her, and because we thought this was the only time we were going to have.
And the midwives, so Holler Street have, well, I know two sort of specific bereavement midwives who are sort of trained and have experience in this, Sarah and Brenda, and they were just fantastic. They brought along, Brenda brought along this memory box, which had a sort of photo album. So she took lots of photos of Florence, all these things that your mind is so muddled that we just wouldn't have thought about this. But now, with a few months distance, it is just so important. We have Florence, pictures of Florence all around our house, and you know, they just kind of took over, I guess, and guided us through everything, took the photos. I mean, they gave us the memory cards with the photos on, and all of this is funded by the National Maternity Hospital Foundation, which is what we've been raising money for.
Two final quick questions, because I'd love to also give the details of the fundraising you're doing for this new bereavement room for Hall Street. When you buried her, you have an inscription. What is that you have on her, you're going to have on her grave?
You gave us hope when we had none, because she did give us a lot of hope. And then cull us all in Irish, so just to sleep peacefully.
Give me the details of the bereavement room, the fundraising you're trying to do, Will and Sinead, for Florence.
So we set up Just Giving page for her, which is where I wrote this piece. And I mean, it was a kind of useful way to tell friends and family also in COVID times about it. So I think you can, if you go on, if you just type in Florence Taverner into Google, it'll come up with a fundraising page. But otherwise, it's fundraising.com/Florence-Taverner, I think.
Well, she'll be forever remembered. Did you want to say something, Sinead?
Yeah, just that, you know, we hope that other parents going through this, that they know that there are supports there, that to take their time. And, you know, you think it's never going to happen to you, but it can happen, unfortunately.
I'm so sorry what happened to you both. But listen, we're going to go out on How Long Will I Love You. It's a song I know it's really special for you both. It's from the soundtrack to the movie About Time. Of course, it's a cover of the Waterboys classic. It's the song that was your first dance at your wedding. And also you played it gently in the background of the little memorial service for Florence when she died. Thanks so much to you both for coming in. Thank you. Mind yourselves.
Tweet at Miriam O'Cal. Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Lots of lovely reaction to our interview there with Will and Sinead. One says, what a sad story, but Will is now a father, not a father to be, as he so poignantly described himself, just as Sinead is a mother. Another says, let's not forget those women who have to go through all of this on their own without supportive parents. Another says, listening to Miriam and sending huge comfort, empathy and love to Sinead and Will and the loss of their baby daughter, Florence. Thread softly all. And another says, Trish says, dear Sinead and Will, how brave and generous the pair of you are after your great misfortune to come and talk to us about your lovely Florence. I'll be seeking out Will's blog, donating and keeping you both in my heart and prayers.